Well, if you live in northeast Wisconsin, you know that it has been dry. We've had a drought for many months in that part of the state. Other parts of the state, we've had floods. Last year, we had some serious flooding in parts of Wisconsin. Lake levels, some places might be up a little bit, but down a lot in some regions of the state. So we thought we'd bring in a couple of experts to talk with us about the droughts, the floods, and the lake levels around Wisconsin and answer your questions about them. Tim Asplund of the DNR in Madison, one of our guests. Tim, welcome to the show. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it very much. And Madeline Gotkowitz is a hydrologist with the Wisconsin Geologic and Natural History Survey. Madeline, thank you so much for being with us as well. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
Really appreciate it. Let's, and by the way, join in at 1-800-642-1234 with your questions, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Either way, we'll get you on the air or do our best to do that. Well, as I said, northeast Wisconsin has, we've had drought for a long time, months, more than months. It's kind of like years, isn't it, Tim?
Yeah, I think it's about not 2000 or so. That's been about 8 to 10 years that there's been a steady decline in lake levels in northern Wisconsin, especially. It's been most dramatic, though, the last 2 to 3 years. I think people are really noticing it quite a bit more. And it's really northeast Wisconsin all the way over to northwestern Mayfield County, that area, too.
Yeah, it's been really pretty tough. What about lake levels? What's happened to lake levels in that part of the state?
Well, they're dropping, but it's not necessarily all the lakes at the same rate. It really depends on the size of the lake and the depth and the watershed area and the size, which we can go into more. But you know, I think it's getting to the point where it's 2 to 4 feet drop in water level. Depends on the lake size. Some of that times that means just a few feet of exposed shoreline, but sometimes that can mean several hundred feet of exposed shoreline. That's when people really start to notice those lake level drops.
Yeah, that's for sure. Madeline, you're a hydrologist with the Wisconsin Geologic and Natural History Survey. Talk about your role and the role of that survey.
Well, the State Geological Survey is actually part of UW Extension. We're part of Cooperative Extension. And our job in the state is to both collect and disseminate information about the natural resources of the state, including geology and hydrogeology and the water resources of the state. As a part of that, over the past couple of years, we've received a lot of phone calls from people about lake levels, both the low lake levels that Tim mentioned in the northern two-thirds of the state. But in the southern third of the state, people have experienced, as you mentioned, a lot of flooding and also some very high lake levels, particularly in Dane and Rock counties.
So your role is helping to try and explain why and what to do about it?
Right. And in some cases, of course, I like to think of every lake as its own special snowflake, and it has its own set of hydrologic and geologic conditions that that dictate how it responds to changes in climate. But on the other hand, there's some kind of unifying principles about lakes and how they receive and lose water to and from the hydrologic system. And so that helps us answer questions, even if we don't have a lot of specific information about one particular location in the state.
What are some of those principles?
Well, one way that we have of thinking about lakes is to think about a lake budget. So we lump all of the inputs of water to the lake. So those would include precipitation, two types of surface water inflow from streams that include stormwater runoff. So that might be a little bit warmer in temperature than the other part of stream inflow. And that we refer to as base flow from streams. And that's the groundwater contribution that discharges to a stream. Then once it reaches the stream, it usually discharges to a lake as part of that surface water input. And then the third input to a lake is often a contribution from groundwater. So, you know, sometimes if you're swimming in a lake, you might hit a particularly cold spot.
Yes.
Out in the lake, and that might indicate that there's a spring contribution right there. So an area in the lake sediment that's particularly permeable, where there's a good connection between the lake and the groundwater system that it's a part of, and there could be an extra slug of groundwater coming in at that part of the lake.
You know, if you fish, and in the heat of summer, that's a good spot to find in a lake, isn't it? There's pretty good fishing in that kind of area, Tim.
Sure, yeah. I think those. It's interesting, the local influences. You sort of think about lakes as being, well, the lake is a lake, but as Madeline said, they are all very, they're over their own unique properties, and finding out these little hot spots are important for fishermen as well as for hydrologists and understanding, you know, what are the influences on the lake levels and the water quality.
Too. Right, but I want to make sure that everybody out there in the audience understands that they can't call the Geological Survey looking for a hot fishing tip, okay?
Well, you know, you really don't need to do that because in the summertime, especially in August, you can find out where those springs are pretty easily. You just go out on the lake and look around and see where the boats are congregated, and often they'll be congregated right around something like that.
Sure. It's interesting, just bridging on that, in the wintertime, too, you can sometimes tell where those localized groundwater inputs through springs are. If there's really concentrated areas, you might have a hole in the ice or a very weak ice along the shoreline, and that can be an indicator of localized groundwater input during the wintertime.
Interesting. Well, we have some callers who have questions for you, so let's go to Doug first in Sun Prairie, and then we'll get to Jared. But Doug, you're up. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I work for a local construction company out in Sun Prairie, hauling gravel. It's a road construction company, and it's right next to a place called Patrick Marsh on Highway 151. And I've just noticed over the years as our pit has gotten bigger, it seems like that marsh has gotten bigger, and I was wondering if there was any correlation there between taking the rock out and the lake getting bigger. I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for calling. Well, Madeline, let's go to you.
Yeah. Again, without having done work at Patrick Marsh specifically, my hunch is that the two observations actually aren't connected and that Patrick Marsh is probably responding to a lot of rainfall and heavy snowfall that we've had in southern Wisconsin over the last year and a half. Certainly, pits and quarries, areas where gravel and sand are taken out, that can impact the groundwater system a bit, but it's not something that would lead to a higher water level necessarily in a nearby wetland.
Okay. Jared in Hazelhurst, on to you now. Hi, Jared.
Hi, great program.
Thanks.
I live off the Willow Flowage, and I was just curious. Last year, they drained the Willow down almost to back to a river. I was wondering, how do they determine, because it didn't seem like before the state had taken it over that they ever drained it down that far. And since then, the last few years, it's been 10, 12 feet down every year. I was wondering how they determine how much water comes out and at what point are they going to just, they put so much money into for the camping and parking, at what point are they just going to drive all the fishermen away?
Well, that's a good point. And when he's talking about dropping those water levels, explain why that gets done.
Yeah, the Willow Flowage is while you're right, it is a state lands around it, and it's a recreational resource. The reason it exists in the dam is actually there for power generation, hydropower generation along the Wisconsin River system. And it's actually managed by the Wisconsin Valley Improvement Corporation, which is a private entity that to maintain basically a constant flow through their hydropower facilities. And so the Willow Flowage is actually a reservoir. And during times of drought and low water conditions, they need to they manage that system to maintain flow in other parts of the river system. And so the last several years, there have been very dramatic drops in some of those reservoirs and flowages up there because of the drought and the need for water downstream. So it's a little there. It's a good example of some of the different uses of lakes and water, and some of the different balances that we as an agency, management regulatory agency, have to balance those needs for hydropower as well as recreation and fishing. So I know that's been a difficult issue up there.
Yeah, I would assume so. So what would be the DNR role in this? This is a private operation, but you would still have, I would think, some control over.
Yeah, I don't want to speak beyond my knowledge base on this particular thing. There is a role of the federal government in a lot of these facilities as well. And so a lot of those we get involved, but it's a license that at the federal level for the hydropower facilities. But we do play a role in trying to help balance out these different uses.
Okay, I gotcha. Yep. So sometimes the water level goes down because they need it to run the electricity, the generators.
Right, not at the Willow Flowage Dam necessarily, but downstream where downstream. The hydro facilities, they need a constant flow of water. Some of the lakes in northern Wisconsin then are managed as reservoir systems, so they do have these wide fluctuations, whereas other ones are more for storage.
Okay, interesting. Let's see. Let's go to Tamara next. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I live up in Columbia County on the shores of Duck Creek.
Okay.
And I don't know if you're familiar, your guests are familiar with that area, but I live upstream from Lake Wiona, which is a lake that's created by a damming of Duck Creek, and the dam was taken out last year by the flooding. And so there's been a lot of changes that have happened in that whole creek system. But one thing that's happening on my property is that there's a small rapids there, and ever since the flooding, the water level this year is low, but the strength of the current has strengthened tremendously. And so what's happening is that the eddy lines are creating a lot of erosion on my land. They used to be quite gentle, but now they're really fierce. And what I'm wondering is that I know there's a plan to reinstate the dam and to restore the lake that is downstream of me. Is there any way that that will create changes upstream in the way that the creek is flowing?
All right, and you know what? We'll ponder that for a couple of minutes, and we will get back to you with an answer, Tamara, as we visit with our two guests, Tim Asplund, of the DNR in Madison, and Madeline Gottkowitz, hydrologist with the Wisconsin Geologic and Natural History Survey, here on the Ideas Net. Glad to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here as we discuss droughts, floods, and lake levels with Tim Asplund, who's a limnologist with the Department of Natural Resources in Madison, and also with Madeline Gottkowitz, who's an assistant professor in Extension, UW Extension, and a hydrologist with the Wisconsin Geologic and Natural History Survey. So really pleased to have them with us today as we talk about these issues, and certainly waiting with open arms for your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Or by email at talk@wpr.org. And a great question from Tamara, who there was some flooding. She lives along a creek. There was some flooding that sort of changed the nature of the creek. Now it's quite fast flowing. She's having some problems with erosion on her property. And part of the reason for that may be the lake that is below stream. And I'm wondering, Madeline, if you can comment on that or talk about that a little bit.
Sure. The caller had asked particularly about Duck Creek near Wyasena in Columbia County. And while I'm not familiar with that particular stretch of creek and the washed-out dam that had been in there, I think it's generally true that when you remove a dam, it tends to increase the gradient along the creek, so that is that there's a higher elevation upstream in the system. Now that you've taken out the dam, there's going to be a lower elevation downstream in the creek, and that will, of course, increase the velocity or the speed of the water traveling through that system. And with an increase in velocity, you would expect to see an increase in erosion along the stream bed. So it is very reasonable to expect that stream would slow down again if the dam is replaced and the lake is restored.
Okay.
Great, thank you. Actually, I can see the gradient when I'm in the creek swimming. I can see that it looks like it's quite a bit steeper, so that really helps me to understand what's going on. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Let's go to Mike in Woodruff next. Mike, hello.
Good. Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Good. I have a place up in Oneida County on a small lake, about 18 acres. So it's a small lake, but I bought the place about 10 years ago, and we've seen the water levels go down maybe a foot and a half or 2 feet, and it makes a big difference on this kind of lake. It's probably a seepage lake and maybe a spring-fed. We're not sure, but it's at least a seepage lake. And I guess the question I have is that some of the people that have been on the lake a long time seem to think that it's a cycle, that the drought, you know, will end and we'll get more water, and then I'm not certain if global warming and just general climatic changes have more to do with it. And I just wanted to know what your opinion is, what we have to look forward to, and if this is going to end, or if it's, or because of the hotter weather, it's going to just get worse.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are good questions. We do have some. You're right. And the current drop is really started about 10 years ago. So if you've only been on a lake for about 10 years, all you've seen is
drop
and it makes people pretty alarmed. We do have some historical water levels. There's a set of research. There's a research station the University City of Wisconsin maintains at Trout Lake, north of Woodruff there. They have water level records going back to 1980 on those lakes, and there have been cycles of water levels going up and down, two or three since 1980. The late 1980s was a period of three very hot, dry summers, 88 through 90 or so, and the water levels in many of those seepage lakes dropped at that time, and then they quickly came back up within a couple of years once it started, the rainfall and snowfall returned more to normal. So there are cycles, but I think, you know, thinking about climate change and some other changes, there are some indications that, you know, the current water levels we're seeing right now are much more extreme than similar, based on similar climate conditions.
Yeah.
So there could be a potential additional role, not just of less rainfall, but increased evaporation because of warmer water temperatures. And
less ice in the winter.
Less ice in the winter. And those are just some questions, really, more than answers right now that people are starting to ask about what are the long-term implications of changes in climate to lake levels and how are they going to respond. So I think, here, if I look into my crystal ball, I would say that, you know, those lakes will come back up again, whether they come up to levels that were seen historically or whether they, next time there's a drought, they go down even lower. I think those are open questions.
Yeah. Laura in Madison had a similar email and a similar question about the fluctuations in the Great Lakes, especially Lake Michigan. I'm old enough to remember a time when there was concern about Lake Michigan being too high and flooding. I don't know, that maybe the 70s, somewhere in there, that the levels were really, really high, and then they've been really, really low. Now they, I think, are coming back a little bit, or is that correct, Madeline? Or?
That's right. They've come back just this year a bit, but they were at historic lows in, I believe it was about 1986.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry, record high levels in 1986.
High, okay, that's when it was.
but then a low period from about 1998 to 2004.
Okay, so it's a little cyclical that way, too, and for similar reasons to what you were talking about earlier, I expect, Tim.
Right, yeah, and I think what's interesting is there was, Madeline shared this with me just a couple days ago, there's an article recently published where they looked at those seepage lakes in north at this university station at Trout Lake and compared the water level record there to the Great Lakes water levels, and they track very, very similarly, which indicates that it's a regional climate issue that and it's affecting not only the Great Lakes but the inland lakes
too.
As well.
Yeah.
Now it's good to point out, I think the caller referred to seepage lakes, and that's a very important distinction. During these drought periods, those seepage lakes are lakes that don't have an inlet or an outlet through a stream.
So that's the definition of
the basic definition is they're entirely dependent on groundwater flow inputs, mm-hmm. and outputs, as well as the precipitation. And so those lakes tend to fluctuate more with changes in climate than, say, a lake that's got a larger watershed or a river system coming in or out.
Okay.
Those seem to be the kind of the sentinel lakes that indicate climate change more than the drainage systems.
Cool.
If you want to.
And anything to add to that, Madeline?
Well, just that in particular, some of the lakes in the northern part of the state, because they are well connected to the shallow sand and gravel aquifer, we expect them to respond to changes in the water table. The contribution to the lake itself, that is in the total input to the lake budget, still may be predominantly through precipitation, but the water level in that lake is reflective of the water table elevation.
Gotcha. Richard in Lake Tomahawk, we turn to you next. Hi, Richard.
Hi, thanks for the program. I'm going to sound a little redundant here, but we're right out of Lake Tomahawk on one of three lakes called North 2. There's North 2, South 2, and Horsehead. Horsehead seems to be the one that I think it is a seepage lake according to your definition. And its level is pretty good, and it runs off through a little dam. North 2 and South 2, their channel is closed up between the two of them, and the level has gone down. Historically, I can remember as a child, maybe back in the 50s, that it was, if I was standing where the water is now, the shoreline where the water was about 4 feet on my torso, straight over. And it's never returned to that. And we did have the pretty severe drought in the 80s, but now it seems like it's even more extreme. And we're spring-fed. And there's no inlet and no outlet. Is it possibly two things that we're thinking about is that the overbuild in the area is with the wells, is that tapping into the aquifer and creating and drawing more water away from the lake, or are the dry snows of the winter also contributing? We're not sure, but we have a lake, Winpudding, not too far away that's almost completely dried up.
I can try to jump in on that.
Go ahead, Tim.
You know, in terms of, I think you've identified a couple of other things to think about, which are really, really good other things. You know, there are these natural fluctuations, but certainly, the second thing you mentioned, I think timing, we sort of think in terms of average rainfall, and a lot of the climate change models, for example, predict average wet conditions or dry conditions over the long term. But really, the timing of that rainfall can be really critical from a groundwater table perspective or a lake level perspective. So if you might get a lot of snowfall, but if it's dry snow and it all evaporates, and then it's not going to melt and soak in that spring. That's when it melts and soaks into the ground. That's when it's going to help the lakes and recharge. Yeah. So you might get a lot of snow, but if it doesn't melt and recharge to the groundwater, it's not going to help the lake levels as much. The issue of the overbuild, I think you mean just more and more homes around lakes.
Correct.
And things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's good to be thinking about that, because when humans, there's two things that happen. One is using more of that water through wells, but also paving over surfaces with pavement, with driveways or things like that, or the home footprint, if you will, affect, again, the rainfall then, instead of going into soaking into the ground, might just run off, and it might run off to a stream or something like that away from the lake. I think that overall those are probably fairly minor factors in some of the northern lake systems. I mean, the population just isn't at levels that would be the case in southern Wisconsin. Plus, a lot of those wells are on private wells. The water is then discharged back to a septic system.
Mm-hmm.
So the water, while the quality might be altered, the water is staying in that basin, the lake basin. It's not leaving the basin.
Vince wondered about, another caller, emailer, wondered about the role that irrigation might play. And I expect in some parts of the state, Madeline, it could play a role.
Yes, certainly in the Central Sands, there's potentially very, very large impacts on the water table and on stream flow from what we call high-capacity wells. High-capacity wells are those permitted by the DNR to pump in excess of 70 gallons per minute. So they are wells that are installed for irrigation or to serve municipalities or industrial facilities. In the Central Sands, of course, there's a large concentration of irrigation wells, and that's a very permeable aquifer. The sand and gravel aquifer can supply a lot of water to wells. On the other hand, if those wells are located close to streams and springs, they can certainly have an impact. Wells capture water, groundwater, that would otherwise discharge to streams and lakes. So certainly, for example, the Little Plover River is in danger of going dry right now. I think flow on that river is now down to half a CFS, half a cubic foot per second, which is very low.
Pretty low.
and the Little Plover is affected by some nearby village wells, as well as a lot of pumping for irrigation in that region.
Hmm.
It's interesting. There's a concentration of some small seepage lakes, too, right in the Plainfield area, which have are pretty clearly experiencing some effects of that regional groundwater pumping and the irrigation in the area. They made headlines a couple of years ago, with lack of water in the lake. And,
right.
It's sort of compounded. You know, it's the pumping, but it's also, there was a short-term drought, some dry spells there, low winter snowfall. So the lakes probably were on a downward cycle anyway, but then the pumping just exacerbates it even more.
Add it all up, and there you are.
Right.
Richard, thanks again. I appreciate your call. I want to get Dan in Wisconsin Dells online here. Dan, hello to you. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Good. In our travels on I-90, I-94 in the Dane County, Rock County area, over the last 2 years, there are farms on the west side that have large tracts of farmland underwater. And that water hasn't seemed to have budged down at all in the last 2 years. Is that water ever going to leave, or is this the brand new lake now that used to be farmland?
Yeah, Madeline?
I like to think of that area as an intermittent wetland, and that is about 2 years ago, in August of 2007, the southern part of the state received record amount of rainfall, and that was followed by a heavy snowfall in the winter of 2007-2008. And then, as I'm sure you'll remember, last spring, of course, in June, we had, you know, over 17 inches of rain in a 10-day period in southern Wisconsin. And that led to a lot of surface water flooding. That is, during the rainstorm, there was a lot of overland flow, but it also provided an enormous amount of recharge to the shallow groundwater system. That raises the elevation of the water table, where the water table exceeds the land surface elevation. That is, in low-lying points, we now have these newly formed small lakes, or what I call intermittent wetlands. And so what you're seeing now is really an expression of the water table. It's a flooded area. But the idea of trying to pump it or drain it, of course, is complicated by the fact that you would be trying to lower the entire water table.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks. That's very interesting. I appreciate that response and that question. You can join in, too, with a question at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And we'll turn to Jane in Manitowish Waters next. Hi, Jane.
Hi, how are you doing? I really appreciate your show, Larry. It's
thank
always
you.
Great. This question probably goes back to some management issues. I live on the lower Manitowish River below the chain, and of course we've all been hard hit by the drought, especially over the last 3 years, and then this year. There's a great amount of biodiversity on the river, and we have right now high and dry mussel beds, reduced fish spawning, and really no nesting waterfowl, which is just almost kind of scary. I think we're really waiting for a DNR assessment plan and some management of, you know, all the water system that conforms to the current conditions. And so just to say that a lot of us are waiting for, you know, a kind of updated water policy so that all of the waterways and all the life on them can come to some sort of balance.
Mm-hmm. And let's turn to Tim Asplin for a comment.
I think that on the Manitowish River system, I'm not familiar with all the specifics there, but there are some water level control structures along that system. And I know there's a lot of, during these drought periods, again, the challenge is when there's a dam or water level control, you know, there's a lot of competing and balancing interests there. Not only is it the wildlife and the flows for the mussels and the fish and the organisms that use the biota that use those rivers, but it's also these other competing factors of people that are upstream of the dam and the riparians and the people that live along those, you know, are expecting a certain amount of water level. The people below are expecting they need to have reasonable use of water. Everybody needs to sort of share and balance. There's a balance there that the I think that the DNR has a role in trying to help manage and regulate those flows and those levels in those systems, and trying to balance all these uses and think about not only, you know, we have a responsibility to manage these public waters,
yes.
But we need to think about what the public is, and that includes not just people, but the wildlife, but it also includes future generations. And so sometimes these decisions about managing those systems are, it is a long-term process and public input and all these different factors need to be weighed in those decisions.
Yeah. It's a tough decision. Several tough decisions to make over something like that.
Sure. Boy. Yep.
Thanks, Jane. Brent in Rice Lake, on to you. Hi, Brent.
Hi. I have a question. It was a couple years ago that the road between a couple of lakes, and it's actually a chain of lakes that connect in high water, and they put the culvert in, and I believe that the culvert level is too high, and it's starving the lower lakes for water. And this lake is historically gone up and down and up and down. You can call it a seepage lake.
Yeah,
there's no streams coming into it. But in high water, the lakes connect, probably to two or three other lakes from the north. But now when they raise the level of the road, I believe they raise the level of the culverts, and it's starving the bottom two lakes out, and the lake that has water in it freezes out predominantly, so it doesn't hold fish to begin with. I'm just wondering, in my area, in the Barron County area, who do I contact to substantiate that the culverts weren't raised, vis-a-vis starving the other lakes out?
Yeah.
Well, there are, the DNR has service centers in different parts of the state. There is one there in Barron, and there's a water management specialist assigned to each county in the state. And that's usually those folks. You can either go to the DNR website and look for the waterway protection area. There's a page that lists those contacts, or you could go to that local service center, ask who would be the local water management specialist. Because a lot of those decisions, they do require permits and some role of the DNR to do that. And so that's where I would start to kind of see what sort of decisions were made there. The county might also have a role to play in some of those issues, especially with if there's a road involved, things like that. So I think either the Barron County or the water management specialist there in Barron County could be a first start.
All right.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Barbara in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Barb.
Hello. I'm sitting here looking at a map of the world, and I see, and we all know, that the world is, what, four-fifths water? Something like that. And it just baffles me that we can't manage, everybody in the world can't have all the water that they need.
That's a good philosophical question there, or practical question as well, Tim.
Sure. Yeah, you know, I think it is pretty amazing, and we live in a very, you can bring that down even from the globe, just to our own area with the Great Lakes. We're sitting right on the shores of the Great Lakes, which is one of the biggest supplies of fresh water in the world. And yet we still have some shortages and issues, but it's a lot of it is just a matter of that distribution of that water, that we don't always have all the water we need at the place we need it when we need it. I think because of these sort of short-term localized impacts.
And when you take a look at the water that is required for, there've been some studies done and how much water is required for a chicken dinner or for a hamburger or for whatever, not only food, but whatever use. We use a tremendous amount of water. And so it's certainly worth it to understand what's going on with why we have a drought situation or flooding situation, what we can do about it, what about the lake levels and what's going on there. And that's why I'm really happy to have you guys with us today.
You know that the caller's question brings up a really interesting issue about conditions within Wisconsin, and that is because our population is centered in several areas of the state, for example, in the greater Milwaukee area, in Waukesha County, here in Dane County. There's a big population center, and we all, many of us, rely on groundwater for our water supply, and that really concentrates water demand in those areas. So,
and with that, we have to conclude. And I, you know, we'll just have to get you back and do this again. It was great to have you here. It's a topic that certainly demands more discussion. So thank you again for being with us. Appreciate it very much.
My pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Tim Asplund and Madeline Gottkiewicz, we'll have them back. And thank you for listening, and stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.